Down to Business with Bobby Kerr on News Talk.
Sponsored by Bank of Ireland.
Our esteemed business panel are here in the shape of Linda Daly. She's a business reporter with the Sunday Times. And Robert Whelan joins us from Rockwell Finance. Good morning to you both.
Morning, Bobby.
Now, the civil service, yes, the civil service, seeking backup for the EU presidency. Linda, it's the front page of the Irish Times. Tell us more.
Yeah, so Ireland is hosting the EU presidency this year.
It starts in July, I believe.
Yeah, and it's a lot of work. The Department of Foreign Affairs has already kind of recruited a whole section so that they can take care of it as part, like they're kind of, I suppose, spearheading it. But all the other departments will have some involvement in it and they'll be hosting meetings throughout the year. This article in the Irish Times by Jack Parr and Pat Leahy says that because it's going to be a lot of extra workload, at least two departments, Department of Enterprise and I think it's Department of Climate, is it, are trying to kind of second workers from accountancy firms and law firms. Now, I mean, it does say that the Department of Enterprise has said it'd be low single digits or single digits anyway.
One of the curious things for me, it's understood the salaries of the staff would largely be covered by their original employer.
Yeah.
So are you telling me that the big four are going to second people to the civil service and not get paid for it?
Yeah, I just would love to see how that is explained.
I'm not sure. Yeah. Maybe we need to read between the lines, but I'm not seeing any. I'm not seeing any evidence of who's paying these people, Robert.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, I that did jump off the page, to be honest with you. They wouldn't be known for their generosity. So, listen. I think ultimately, as a country, this is a great opportunity for us to put ourselves first and foremost amongst the European community.
Absolutely.
It's a great opportunity to showcase the country. It's great for business, more importantly, because hopefully some new trade links will be opened up, more relationships. You know yourself, Bobby.
And I note that our main job when you're acting as EU president is that you keep the peace between the other 27.
Yeah.
That's kind of your fundamental role.
Absolutely, yeah, that was a
for the 6 months.
Yeah, and this piece by Jack Power, it's very, very illuminating, to be honest with you. And he was saying that effectively every government minister was deployed to Brussels to actually start building those relationships because apparently you do play peacemaker. One of the pieces of colour I found in it, you might just give you a tickle, Bobby, is every county in Ireland has been paired with an appropriate EU country.
No way.
Yeah, absolutely. So Micheál Martin's Cork got France for obvious reasons, you know, fabulous culinary. Carlo got Luxembourg, Bobby, where the money is.
Two places of note, one being Luxembourg, the other being Carlo.
Yeah, but it is.
And you didn't tell me who Kilkenny got.
Kilkenny got Romania.
Oh, good. Good luck to them.
But it is a great opportunity for us. I definitely think I'm all for anything that makes Ireland look good, and as long as we look competent. And the budget is actually 300 million for this presidency.
Yeah, so. Okay. Well, I think it's great, and we may as well embrace it and get on with it.
Absolutely.
Linda, interesting Charlie Weston's piece on the front page. We've had a relentless rain. I think it's been, 52 days or something where there's been rain every day. But the cost of claims now to repair homes damaged by this bad weather has actually trebled.
Yeah, so according to Charlie's piece, experts say if a typical roof-related claim has risen from between 2,000 and 3,000 to between 6,000 and 7,000. And actually, it wasn't necessarily flood damage, but I have noticed recently two cases. House two doors up the road from people outside their back garden went on fire there a few weeks ago. It didn't go into the house. It was a huge fire. And also my parents' wall was falling down. So they got the assessors out, and what the assessor said was because their house was underinsured, they couldn't replace the wall. So they're only getting a third of the cost of the wall because their house is underinsured. So this really shows the rate of repairs are raising.
I think the standout line for me in the piece is that 1 in 20 buildings in Ireland are already uninsurable due to flooding risks.
Yes,
1 in 20.
Or later on, it does kind of clarify that, or they have to pay more than what the average person pays. So I suppose really, if these costs are increasing significantly, you really have to make sure that your house is fully insured properly.
Yeah, and it's a bit of a bear pit, Robert, in terms of knowing what you should be insured for or not.
Yeah.
And you know, insurance is a, it's just one of those industries that, you know, you never seem to win. They always seem to win.
Absolutely. Like it's a huge issue for anybody who's going to buy a property with a mortgage.
Yeah.
Because, and a lot of people in Dublin find themselves running into that particular problem when they find this nice little three bed cottage, but it's in a floodplain and they can't get it insured. And the bank, the dream is gone. The only way you'll buy it is a cash buyer.
Yeah.
And that's a huge issue. And then the second thing is the cost of insurance is already soaring as it is. And they're saying here insurance premiums will go up again. And ultimately, I think as a financial professional, I always say, they always say you should use, there's the, is it the
Chartered Surveyors?
Yeah.
SCSI.
It is a very good guide to at least making sure you adequately insure your property.
Yeah.
But no, it is, it's very, but very hard.
Like as a consumer, if you make a claim, you're going to be paying for it for the rest of your days, or you run the risk of being declared uninsurable.
Absolutely. Particularly with flood. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, it's a, it's a cruel space. Let's look at some of the business stories. Aer Lingus on course to be Europe's second largest transatlantic carrier. Great numbers out from them this week, Linda. Much stronger than expected.
Yeah, the operating profit jumped from 77 million to 282 million.
Incredible.
Which is, yeah, a really good day for Lynn Embleton. Yeah, so they're saying they're the second largest transatlantic carrier after their sister company, BA. So BA and Aer Lingus are owned by, both owned by IAG. Look, I was surprised because I thought that perhaps transatlantic flights might have been down, but they are increasing the number of locations, the destinations that they're going to in the States. And Lynn Embleton has done a good job. I mean, she's fended off a strike and everything at the company. So, yeah, I mean, look, Ryanair will say they don't do transatlantic flights, so they can't be beyond that.
Yeah, and, you know, there's another argument that says, are they even the national carrier anymore, Robert?
Yeah, I suppose when you look at it that way.
What did you make of the numbers?
Yeah, fantastic. Like, listen, at the end of the day, profit of 282 million is nothing to be sniffed at.
Yeah.
And it is a phenomenal turnaround of a company that was, let's be honest, was in severe financial difficulty not so long ago. I think for the country, again, if we can maintain those soft power links with the US by being the second largest carrier in, and you can get from now, they're saying Pittsburgh and Raleigh Durham. So you're opening up parts of America to Ireland, which just didn't exist. Like, it was traditionally just Boston, New York, yeah, California.
And there's been a fierce track record of starting new routes and then abandoning them. Mm. So I hope they stick with these.
Yeah, please God, yeah. But
because it is great to be able to go to somewhere like Nashville.
Well, that's huge.
Direct from Dublin.
Yeah, my sister-in-law just returned from there, actually. So, and you only go there because of the direct flight.
Yeah.
So we'd like to think that comes the other way around, that people in Pittsburgh, people in Nashville would say, well, should we go to Dublin now? Because you don't have to hub out of London or Frankfurt or something like that. So again, really good story. And again, the Lynn Embleton, the CEO, references the passenger cap, which is, to me, I know Michael O'Leary bangs on about it, but he's 100% right. It's insanity.
Yeah.
We have a major thirst in this country to try and drive more people to come in and visit the country. Tourism is going to be incredibly important to us, particularly as the economy shifts. And anything we can do to make that experience just a little bit easier and allow these airlines to bring people in, I'm personally in favour.
It has been effectively removed. It's just that they want it in legislation now. So Michael O'Leary was saying a few weeks ago that he was going to take out ads ahead of Micheál Martin's visit to the States on Fox News just to get it into legislation. So, yeah.
No, I think it'll happen. Just a related story. Well, it's not really. Well, it is kind of related. Is Shannon an international airport or a regional one? Now, people from Clare and Limerick, I know, will have one view, Linda. What is Cantonin telling us?
Yeah, look, I mean, this is the case of Shannon talking out of both sides of its mouth, really. So it's getting funding under the regional airport scheme. So it's kind of going cap in hand to the government, but at the same time claiming it's an international airport. And if you look at the figures, it does seem to be an international airport. It handled 2.3 million passengers last year, compared to 1.4 million that all the other regional airports together had.
Yeah, that's not Kerry and Donegal.
Yeah, and Cork. So I suppose, I think it would want to be known as an international airport, or at least on its website it says it is. But if there's money going, I'm sure it'll doesn't mind being easy called
known, easy airport. Known you're not from Shannon. Or,
like. I haven't used Shannon Airport in a long time.
Robert, there's a really, really interesting, well, it's a well-known business story. But we're now seeing that Stripe, they're considering PayPal as an acquisition in what's known as a full circle moment from the Collison brothers.
This is an incredible Irish story.
Yeah.
And
bring us through us, if you would.
Yeah, so absolutely. So in fairness, so everyone is obviously familiar at this stage with the Collison brothers.
Just before you start out, yes. Robert, one thing that is pointed out here in the article, founded by Tipperary born and Limerick educated. So we all want a bit of the Collison brothers. Sorry, I interrupted
absolutely,
you.
Absolutely, yeah. they effectively started off like they won the BT Young Scientist Award and they headed off to America to go to college and one went to Harvard and the other went to MIT. And basically, in early 2010, they got some funding by a company called Y Combinator, which is a very famous hub in San Francisco. But if you kind of just, the main story is that they launched in 2011 and they got their first kind of funding round, major funding round, which valued the company at $500 million in 2011. Yeah. And since then, over the intervening 14, nearly 15 years, they've had various funding rounds. And if you looked at the companies, like in PayPal itself, which we'll say now, tried to buy Stripe in 2013.
Right.
And which, let's come back to that. But in 2014, you're looking at their value grew to $1.75 billion. And then you see the companies they started to work with, Apple Pay, Facebook, Twitter. And then in 2016, their valuation doubled to $9 billion. And then in 2019, it got to $35 billion.
Wow.
And then they started working with banks like Goldman Sachs and Citigroup. Like, you don't get on these platforms without being best in class. It's an incredible story. And then in 2021, its valuation swelled to an eye-notching $95 billion after raising a further $600 million.
And then they drop to $50 billion from $95, which is like half their value.
That was the tech crunch.
It's back up to 107.
107.
As of the end of last year.
Yeah, and they're saying that there's a tender offer going out this week, which would value it at $135 billion.
Wow.
And obviously, they're swilling in a lot of cash. Sitting on a valuation of that size, you'd be well able to raise it. And they have decided that one of the things they should be doing with it is acquiring their old friends in PayPal, who haven't had a good time of it. PayPal, famously founded by Mr. Elon Musk and Peter Thiel. That's where they made their money. And who both ironically are early stage investors in Stripe. And long story short, PayPal itself has had its troubles. It had an all-time high of $307 in July 21 as a share price and is currently trading around $46 today. So great move, great Irish story, great business story. And please God, go on to bigger and better things.
So Linda, Tipperary born and Limerick educated, I'd say they'd be for Shannon Airport.
Yeah.
Now, bring us on to Primark. Again, a great business story covered again in the Irish Examiner. I have to say, the Irish Examiner of late, in terms of business stories, they really have been giving us decent fodder in terms of their analysis because the story that Robert just told us about the Collisons came from, and on the same page, is this story now about Primark facing Shein challenge as shoppers count their pennies?
Yeah.
Linda.
Yeah. So, I mean, look, this is a taken from Bloomberg, this article, but it's a good selection of pieces that are in the business section, definitely. Look, Primark, this piece starts off with a case study, as they tend to bring colour, and it's a student who is shopping in Primark, but doesn't shop there much anymore because she has noticed that prices have gone up. Primark has had its troubles. It's at the moment, it's the company that owns it, AB Foods, is considering spinning it off. That's not too unusual because a lot of companies now are looking at kind of simplifying their structures and spinning off their.
It would probably make it more attractive because it's not tied up in the AB Foods conglomerate.
It's also suffered because there's been a hollowing out of the high street in the UK as well. So it's suffered on that part. But at the same time, it's still expanding. It's opening in Qatar, Middle East, in Manhattan. And it's doing well. But the main challenger is these online retailers such as Shein and Temu. And I haven't never shopped from Shein myself, but I do have a 21-year-old who has. And they come through and she loves the packages. Primark, up until a couple of years ago, didn't even have an online e-commerce site because they said that it would be too expensive. There's a lot of returns, you know, and that kind of outdo the cheaper.
You can still buy a T-shirt for €3.
Yeah.
In Primark.
Yeah, and they get people in with the low prices, and the stores now are really nice to visit. I mean, it is a good Irish success story, as Stripe is too. Yeah. You
know? They've 30 shops in the US.
Yeah, yeah.
And interesting now how the sort of tariffs would affect that business.
Yeah, so they are increasing prices over there, they've said, because of the tariffs. I mean, the US, they haven't expanded as quickly as they originally planned to. They've kind of taken it slower, a kind of slower approach to that because it's a more difficult market to get into.
Yeah. Interesting as well, in the same piece, a 2025 survey by Mintel found almost half of women in Britain aged between 16 and 34 had bought fashion items from Shein in the last 12 months.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm not in that.
Therein lies your daughter's argument.
Yeah, yeah. It's just amazing the growth of Shein without a high street retail presence. So it will be interesting to see if they do eventually. They have opened kind of pop-up shops. It'll be interesting to see if they go back and they do actually start selling bricks and mortar.
Now, we don't normally cover politics in this piece, but who is Hannah Spencer? She's a plumber. She's a school dropout. And she's now Britain's newest MP. Tell us a little bit about this lady, Robert.
Yes, she's had, let's just say, for a politician, definitely she's had an unusual background before she entered politics. She's effectively, to be honest with you, she's a very impressive young woman. She only entered politics in 2023, and she did so effectively after what she described herself as being radicalised by COVID and the response to COVID and the
parties and all
the party gate and all of the inequalities it exposed. She grew up in Bolton, leaving school at 16, trained to become a plumber. Which as a woman, let's be very honest with you, is unusual, and credit to her. And she started her own business at age 24, Hannah's Household Plumbing.
And fair play to her.
Fair play to her. It's fantastic. Yeah. And like, listen, politics aside, I think it's great to bring her background is obviously coming from a working class background. She's been effectively away from the cut and thrust of day-to-day politics for most of her life. She's not a lawyer. She's not a teacher. She's not, you know what I mean? She's someone who's got a great degree of real world experience. And it just, I think that is what the voters are obviously leaning into.
Yeah.
Is they're looking to see someone who genuine. There's a lot of people saying, I know, represents them. Yeah, I feel your pain.
Yeah,
they go, you really don't. But they look at her and they go, no, you do. You understand it. You get it. And I do think it could spawn a new generation of type of politician, definitely.
What's good about this is, you know, you have a working class person not being elected for the sake of it. You know, she held Reform back from that seat and they were kind of odds on favourite to win it, even though it was a traditionally Labour seat. But you have somebody who's clearly intelligent, who's clearly driven, and that's what you need. You can have working class people, I'm obviously a working class person, to you know, represent my constituency, but we need people who can back it up as well, not just be elected for the sake.
Yeah, yeah. It also, you know, it also shows, you know, the way, and by-elections have a kind of a curious habit of sort of representing what's happening now. And they, if people are apathetic or cheesed off about that this kind of candidate is, they see as representing them.
Absolutely. And interestingly, the vote in that constituency was up in the by-election versus what it was in the general, which again is a level of sentiment within that, obviously, constituency, how annoyed they are that they came out and voted more in a by-election than a general election.
Now, Linda, I don't know if you go to many weddings, but Aidan O'Connell in the Irish Independent is telling us that I'll spend 4,000 on weddings this year. A save the date is like a court summons.
Yes. This is a very good piece, very funny. But yeah, look, I haven't had a wedding now in a good while. But if you're of a certain age, around 30, I do know one of my colleagues went to something like 9 weddings herself last year. And that involved then also going on hen parties abroad.
Yeah.
She had her own wedding too. So, I mean, it's an expensive business. So she'll spend, Aidan O'Connell would spend 4,000 on weddings this year. I mean, look, people can spend more. You're talking about the present, you're talking about the outfit, especially as a woman. Like, it's, you know, you have
She
to
says she's a separate wedding fund and it's not even for me. Some friends stash cash weekly just to survive the wedding season. Matrimony is big money and it only gets more expensive.
Absolutely, at that. This is a, I love this piece. She really nailed it. She's a great colour writer, and to be fair, it's real. Like, it is an incredible expense, and particularly if you're in that. They were saying between the hens and the stags and the wedding itself. Like, if you have to go away, a hotel is 200 quid.
Yeah.
The gift is 200 quid. So there's 400 quid per wedding before you put your hand in your pocket and buy a drink. Then you've got to do the stag. I can't see how you get out with less than 700-800 euros per wedding.
And people at that age are saving for houses as well.
Yeah, yeah. It's obscene, but you can go bananas if you want.
She suggests a few fairy lights, some fold-out chairs and a local DJ called DJ Pats on the decks, and you've got the wedding night of anybody's life.
Yeah, and a GAA club would be great.
And there was another piece further on in the same paper about basically it analysed various couples, what they had spent and what they now reflecting on their spends. Would they spend it again or would they best avoid it? Was there anything that caught your eye there, Linda?
Yeah, well, Robert kind of pointed out to me, €4,000 for flowers. I mean, something that will last a week or even a day, and then having to throw them out. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
It does seem, when you think back of it, if you're looking for €4,000 someday.
Exactly.
And you're thinking, Jesus, that's what we spent on the flowers at the wedding.
Yeah, no, the thing that jumped out to me was the €5,000 for the wedding planner. And she was worth every penny, apparently.
if you're going to be a bridezilla, you know.
Absolutely, No, I think, like, listen, I remember the advice I got. My brother is a wedding band member. And obviously he's done a lot of weddings. And he said, two things in every wedding, the band and the food. That's all people care about.
Yeah, I think he might be right. Yeah. That would be the way I'd be judging a wedding. Yeah. Yeah. Now, just to finish out then, Adrian Weckler, he great writer, great tech guy. He's given us 8 things, basically, that we need to be best avoided when it comes to our, basically, our online presence. So, loud phone alerts, using AI in an email. Here are the biggest tech no-nos to avoid. Linda.
Yeah, as a regular Lewis user, I unfortunately have had to listen to people listening to social media at full volume on their phones.
It's horrendous.
It's absolutely ridiculous. Bright phone screens in cinemas. You know, you're not supposed to actually look at your phone in the cinema, but people do take it out. not curbing in ticks with earphones in. So you put your earphones in, then you forget that the outside world exists and you start coughing and clearing your throat. Another one is the WhatsApp messages. Now, I'm not guilty of I reply to people on WhatsApp messages, but I do have one friend who will remain nameless, who will send me a 4-minute, 5-minute WhatsApp message.
Well, of all of them, that's my biggest irritation.
I'm having a conversation with her. I'm answering her as she's speaking. And then I realise, oh no, this is not live.
And I hear my daughters listening to them on high speed.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
So they accelerate the speed. You can get through it in half the time. What about you, Robert, just briefly there?
Yeah, I think I would 100% agree on anything above 30 seconds in a WhatsApp voice memo. Just give me a bell. using AI in emails, definitely something that I have a bugbear about, because particularly if it's a query or a work-related one, put the effort into it.
All right. Great review of the business stories and others. Thank you, Linda Daly. Thank you, Robert Whelan.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Sponsored by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 8. News Talk. Conversation that counts.